form.
One and all to the Kerno Connection, your little neural pathway to the southwest of the UK. Cornwall, that is. We're coming to you live out of Speak Free Radio from the good folks across the pond. And, it's great to be here. Your hosts tonight will be Maleficus Scott and Shelley Tasker. How are you, Shelley?
Good evening, Maleficus. Good evening, listeners. Jolly, jolly good.
Yeah,
thank you.
You've just had a fantastic show. I caught the tail end of it. I'm really looking forward to listening back.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, very interesting guy. Fascinating.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, before we start, Shelley, as always, I should say that we here on the Kerno Connection reserve the rights to all our words and all our thoughts. We do this simply because it's impossible to reserve the rights to anyone else's. A thought worth bearing in mind for any practitioner of law.
You got the way of knowing, I got the way of showing you just how I feel. You got the way of telling, except when I start yelling at you like it ain't real. Kick off your dancing shoes, here come the mean depression blues. You got no understanding, you shouldn't be demanding on you. Say it's nothing. You always think I'm bluffing, and it can't be that real. There's nothing more to lose. Here come the mean depression blues.
Fantastic. The amazing Graham Hart there. Brilliant. Great to be back. What's on, Shelley?
What's on?
What's on?
What's on? Not a lot. It's been a lush day. Today was my first day on nanny duty. Because I'm posh and I'm too young to be a nanny or a granny. It was lovely. Lovely. She slept for 2 hours on me. But in the midst of that...
Oh, what a shame. Yeah. You couldn't move then, I take it.
Oh, do you know what, though? I must have, like, pressed, what's the word, snooze about 5 times this morning. And I was hoping for a later nap. You know, 1 o'clock would have suited me. But 11 o'clock was a bit early. And then I couldn't reach my bloody book to read. So I just scrolled on my phone. But I had half a Christmas cake made out there. I needed to brush my teeth. Just lots of little things. It just brings back memories. So it's been a nice, relaxing day.
Wow. And, yeah. And connections with the future generations as well.
It is. And I took her to see my nan. I don't know if I told you, but last week or the week before, I did like a family photo shoot.
Okay.
5 generations. We've been saying for ages since Phoebe was born we would do it. So, you know, we went in the nursing home and just did it. She was in the bed, but we got lots of really nice touching photos and stuff, you know. So it's lovely.
You beauty. That's so important. It's so important.
Just little one photo in particular of, like, you can't even see my nan's face, but you've just got her hand next to Phoebe's hand. And, you know, she's 99 years old and a 9-month-old baby.
Wow.
And then it's just got the smile in the background of Phoebe. And I took Piran in to see her, and, you know, it's probably the last time that he would see her. And she gave him a couple of pounds and stuff. It was nice. And, it was nice. It was nice. So,
Well done you. Really
well
important.
Pat
it's funny.
On the back.
Yeah, pat on the back for you. And your future generations will be thanking you as well. That's the point, isn't it?
It's made me think of a new, like, area of photography, to be honest with you. I know it's a bit morbid, but memories, you know. And this Sunday is Mother's Day, and I'm actually going into the nursing home where I work, and I'm doing photo shoots. They've just been asked to give donations towards, like, the residence fund, but I'm gonna photograph people with their mums and stuff. It's nice to do something a bit meaningful. Yeah,
it's really, you know, one of the things that has really hit home with me is, you know, a few weeks back when I went and sat and interviewed my dad about Willoughby Gallatin and Willoughby's farm and the folk cottage and all that kind of thing. I'm going to make a habit of doing it because I'm down there once a week. So, you know, when I stop for a cup of tea or I stop to, you know, I finish doing what I'm doing there for the day, I'm just going to, you know, because there's never a huge amount to do there, really. I mean, bearing in mind I'm taking over the responsibilities of an 82-year-old man, there's not a huge amount to do there. But I'm going to take the recorder with me every time, just so that, you know. And, you know, I can put it all together in one place and, you know, just my father's memories. It'll be great. I wish I'd started doing
thinking.
It ages ago.
Yeah, I wish I did more of an interview, like a proper interview with Nan. And the thing is now, like, when she's talking, she's whispering because she's struggling with her muscles and her throat and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not really the right time now to do that. But I have... I filmed her a couple of years ago and I put it up on TikTok and it's had like 50,000 views. It's about her. She's given me, she says, can you like post these envelopes for me? And she wanted me to get a birthday card and I was telling her that it was £5 and my nan, she's like, what, £5? You know, and then she tries giving me money for the cleaning and stuff and I'm telling her that next week I'm double time and everything. And, you know, a lot of people, I haven't even bothered reading all the comments. Some people were like, you make your nan pay for you to clean and all this stuff. But other people were like, they loved it, yeah. But it's little things like that. I have got that. But I have asked her a lot more questions over the last couple of weeks, you know. But we often leave these things too late, don't we?
We always leave these things too late.
All of a sudden, I want to know so much more about her, and
as soon as she goes, all those memories go with her.
Mm.
It's vitally important. It's vitally important, and it's a wonderful opportunity. And as I say, I'm going to try and make as many recordings of my dad as I can, and I should be doing it with all members of the family, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's something that started, so it will continue. I would have to make special arrangements for it to even occur with other members of the family, if you get what I mean. So, it's good. It's really good. It all points towards our own heritage and our history and our and that's something that if we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for our history. Regardless of whether we know.
No. I tried to explain to Piran, you know, I said, that's your granddad's mum. And I said, you're probably not going to see her again, Piran, you know. But they don't care, do they? They're only nine. And I wouldn't want him to really care, to be honest with you. But he did say, because I said the other day, you're going to go and see Nan, because it will probably be the last time. Well, this is morbid, isn't it? And he said, I'll just go to a funeral. And that's like, no, I don't think a funeral, you know, I'm not sure. My friends, she's got to take her 10-year-old son to her dad's funeral. And I mean, they do need to learn about life, don't they? I think we try to protect them as much as we can. But it's more that you don't want to see, you don't want them seeing you so upset, I think, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, but we've been there today.
I wasn't allowed to go to my granddad's funeral when I was
young. Right, okay.
Which I always think back. He really upset me when I was a kid, and he didn't mean to upset me. This is not the guy that wrote the book. He died when Mum was 12. This is my dad's dad.
Right.
He upset me when I was a little kid, and it was around Christmas time. They'd come to stay, and he'd probably sat and had a few too many brandies or whatever, and he was just chatting away to me, and he said, "You know what?" He said, "I love you kids." He said, "I'll always love you kids." He said, "Even when I'm dead and gone, I'll still love you kids." And of course, I went to my bedroom and started crying because I didn't want to lose my granddad, you know, and all that. No, I was only little. Do you know what I mean? But that's kind of my endearing memory of my granddad, really. That's my last sort of really strong memory of my granddad. And I think had I been allowed to go to the funeral at such a young age, that would have been the strong memory of my granddad. And I think the one that I've got is far more important. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll think about it. It's awful, really, because we're, like, making these little plans. And it's, well, you know, it's inevitable. And even hearing her say, you know, I just want to go now. I'm ready, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't imagine being 99 years old and knowing that your body's slowly shutting down and, you know, she could just about hold a cup. And she's having problems swallowing now. And, like I said, her voice is a whisper. Yeah. And, you know, her other son is coming home from Ireland on Monday. And she said, I'm not sure if I'll be here to see him or not. And but, you know, we talked the other night about the afterlife and stuff like that. And we've often over the years, she always says, I think it's a load of rubbish. But she's, you know, and her words are always ridiculous. I mean, we were having a good conversation about Enid Blyton one night this week. And I was saying about that her plaque had been taken down for racism and stuff. And she said, ridiculous. She always says that about stuff. But, yeah, I've been lucky. I'm 47 in a couple of weeks. And I think, you know, I've had my nan in my life all these years, really.
Yeah, you're very lucky. Yeah, you're very lucky.
Very lucky, yeah. We're all very close, lucky.
I lost my last grandparent, I think, when I was about 20. So,
right.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah,
but cultural heritage is very important, as we always sort of prod people in that direction on this show. I feel because you know it's pointless concentrating on all the bad things that are happening in the world if you don't have an appreciation for all the things, the good things, and the things that came before you. And the things that came before you will help you work your way through the horrible things that apparently might or might not happen. Yeah, you've got to have that connection. I think, and the older I get, the more important I feel that connection is. I suppose because I'm watching my kids grow up, and like with you, you know, your nana duties today. I don't get the wrong word. I don't want to miss.
Don't age me.
Yeah, I don't want to misappropriate the usage of the name.
Your
nana status ship or status. You know it's a great connection to have that, and just the fact that you've had all of those together in the same room. That's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. It is nice. You know, I was dreading it a little bit, to be fair. And then I just...
No, not a family feud round Nanny's bed.
Oh, no, not that. I was talking about having my granddaughter one day a week. You know, I kind of agreed to it. And I was like, oh, my God, I only get 2 days off as it is. And but no, it's not going to be for very long. And, you know, when I was holding her today and she was sleeping and stuff, it made me think back to, like, when her mum was sleeping in my arms and stuff. And, yeah, it's lovely. And you've got the perfect excuse for the house being a tip. And I came... I mean... you know, I left here. It was a bit, I don't like the whole car seat situation and stuff. So I went to see my nan at about 3:30 and I'm in there, get Phoebe out and stuff. And she's happy. And then the phone rings. I've got to pick Piran up. Well, Lego Club was cancelled. I didn't know. So I put her back in the car and now she's crying. And I pick Piran up, go back to the home. It's only around the corner. But it's the whole getting the baby in and out the car seat. That's just such a kerfuffle. And then we're trying to stop her crying and she's wet all the way through, so I've got her stripped off naked. And I think Nan loved it, because I mean these rooms are so hot and there's nothing like a naked baby. They're just so cute. And there's just stuff everywhere all over the floor, you know, nappies, wet white bottle. And she fell asleep in my arms again. She's obviously catching up on sleep today, and I just popped her on the end of Nan's bed. I'll have to send you a photo over of it later. Aww. But so we just stayed for another like 5 minutes and then home again. And it was just like, oh, that last hour, just, you know, in the car seat, out the car seat.
Aren't you thankful, though, that you've done your bit and you don't have to do it every day? I know that I am, having gone through three children. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think because I've got like my two older children and then I've got a 10-year-old, I've still not really had a break. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not moaning, because I wouldn't be without any of them. But you know, there's a 13-year age gap, and I feel like now Piran's at school full time. I'm now sorted with my job. I've got 2 days off, and now it's like I've got Phoebe. But then, like today, Mum popped up for a couple of hours, and I have finished my Christmas cake now. I know it's nearly Easter, but I didn't get round to make it at Christmas, so I thought I'd make an Easter cake, but like a Christmas cake, obviously with Easter decorations. I haven't managed to cook it, but it's all ready to go in the cooker tomorrow. So I've achieved one thing. But I came back from walking the dog and Darren's out there doing all the dishes. He'd like come back, but he doesn't mind, you know. I'm like, oh my god, don't do that. I was like, you've been at work all day, I'm off tomorrow. And he's like, oh, I don't mind. He's good as gold, you know. But
oh, he's a keeper, that one, I keep telling you.
Oh,
he's
he absolutely is. Yeah. Can't complain at all.
And from I've only met him once, but he seems really, really easygoing. So, yeah,
he'd have to be put up with me, wouldn't he?
I think you would. Funny. Yeah,
no one tells me what to do.
I said, I think I said a similar thing to your dad the last time we chatted. I said, how the hell did you cope with that? Growing up in the household, it's a force to be reckoned with, isn't it?
Yeah, just leave me to my own devices. Yeah.
Well, listen, I received yesterday, I'd like to say a big thank you to Phil Hadley, who we had on last week. He was fantastic, wasn't he?
He was amazing. And I received today, and I've got to send him an email. I haven't had a chance yet.
No, I haven't. Well, I received my books yesterday, No Small Stir and A Place and a Name. And I'm they're actually really lovely illustration on the front of the first one.
Yeah, they
obviously
are.
Obviously hand-drawn by somebody. And I'm really looking forward to going through them. And I thought, do you know what? I thought they'd be right up your street, Shelley, because I don't do fiction, but I do history. I do. Yeah. I'd rather watch a documentary than EastEnders. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. But I think for you, you like a bit of both. And I think it's a perfect mixture for you, isn't it? There's a bit of excitement and a bit of interest to take you through the narrative of the history of that era in Cornwall. So I'm really looking forward to having a read through. So, if anyone is interested, as I say, we had Phil Hadley, the historian, on last week. He also writes novels as well, so you can check him out at philhadleypublications.com, all one word. So anyone can't find it, by all means, send me an email at maleficus@outlook.com and I'll point you in the right direction. But thank you if you're listening, Phil, and if you're not, I'm going to send you an email anyway. So there you go.
Yes, I have to. Yeah, I'm thrilled. I haven't had a chance yet to have a proper look. Mum passed me the parcel. She said, oh, it feels like books. And I went, ooh. So I just like quickly looked at them and I put them down because I've just been mentally busy. But no, have a look later. Yeah. Nice to get presents in the post.
It's lovely. What a lovely gesture. So
definitely. Very kind.
And again, you know, as I say, it's all sort of knitting together this sort of cultural heritage that we all share. One thing that you may remember, Shelley, and listeners may remember from quite a while back on the Curnow Connection, I talked about the Cornwall Aviation Museum, the Cornwall Aviation Heritage Centre. That's what it was called.
Right.
So I'm just going to read you this very, very briefly, because believe it or not, we're creeping up on the bottom of the hour. This comes from Cornwall Lies, Live. Aviation museum thrown out of home is replaced by dormant company not creating promise jobs. Now, I was going to get the guy on, and I may still be able to get the guy on. He was busy at the time, the guy who runs this. So the Cornwall Aviation Heritage Centre, essentially... So I'll read a little bit of this for you so that you get the gist. So, much-loved Aviation Museum, which was forced out of its home by Cornwall Council, had to fold and has been replaced by a dormant company which has not created any jobs or income for Cornwall. This was why they were hurriedly rushed out of the area that they were using on the end of a disused runway from a World War II airfield, okay?
Right.
That's the claim from Richard Spencer Breeze, founding director of the now permanently closed Cornwall Aviation Heritage Centre. He believes forcing the much-loved museum out of its home in Cornwall Airport near Newquay, which is owned by Cornwall Council, was unnecessary and didn't have to happen when it did. By the looks of it, didn't have to happen at all. So the Aviation Museum was given in October 2022. It was given until March 2023 to clear out of its home of 7 years so the site could make way for the UK branch of the Canadian aerospace company Space Engine Systems Limited. Right? Despite a petition signed by more than 40,000 people asking for the aviation museum to be saved, it was given notice to vacate its premises at Newquay Airport last spring. Cornwall Airport Limited, which is owned by Cornwall Council, issued the notice to immediately vacate the site in Cornwall through its agent, CBRE Property Management. Okay, there's another subsidiary of Cornwall Council, the illegal Cornwall Council. It formally advised the Cornwall Aviation Heritage, or the I'll just say CAHC, because that's the acronym. It formally advised the CAHC on the Tuesday of April the 4th, 2023, to clear the entire site and move thousands of valuable heritage exhibits by Tuesday the 11th of April. Otherwise, the council's agent would make arrangements for it all to be disposed of.
Oh,
okay.
Great.
Right, so I'm not going to read through the whole article. It is there on Cornwall Live for anyone to go and have a look. But what's happened is that this company, they needed the space because there was this Canadian company that was going to create lots of jobs for Cornwall. Do you remember the whole space thing going out of Cornwall? Ooh, we're going to have rockets going out of Cornwall. Yeah. Absolute load of nonsense. The company itself that they made way for is dormant. I mean dormant. Quite literally dormant. I think its last entry if I do a quick search here for Company House. There we go. Where is it? Okay. Company's House shows the Canadian company listed as manufacturing air and spacecraft-related machinery and has an active status with a dormant company. Accounts files in December of 2023 for a whopping £100. So that's what the company's turned over.
I said
at the time, this is a way of getting rid of cultural heritage. That Cornwall Council knew full well that they would struggle to move all the stuff that they had. When I actually spoke to the director, because I asked him if he'd come on the show and talk about it while it was all going on, and he said, I would love to come and talk to you about it. He said, but right now I'm manning a forklift. We have got literally a handful of days to shift all our stuff to the old site at the other end of the runway where it's just going to be there being held in storage. They've had to dismantle and scrap two of their largest planes, which, in and of themselves were, one was a Canberra, and I believe the other one was the DC-10 that carried all the names of the Victoria Cross holders from the RAF. Yeah?
They've
had to get rid of... And he said, I would love to come on the radio. He said, but the council have allowed us to have the space at the other runway, which we originally operated on before we were kicked out of that as well. He said, and the council have told me if there is any repercussions in the newspapers in the coming months, we won't be allowed that either. So he said, I'd love to come on the radio. He said, but I can't at the moment. My hands are tied. So I will contact him again, because obviously he's given an interview to Cornwall Live, and we can see where that goes. But I just thought I'd fill you in on that, because we did mention that a little while back.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, absolutely disgusting. Really, really irritating.
Oh, it's so sad. Yeah, so sad.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, sorry about that. Rant over. Yeah, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, so if you like, we can call this the bottom of the hour, and I will just let the listening audience know. You're listening to speakfreeradio.com, Malefica Scott and Shelley Tasker on the Kerno Connection. Coming up after us is the amazing Jim Fetzer with Authentic News, and that's a two-hour show, I believe, runs live, or at least is simulcast from republicbroadcasting.org. So... yeah, that'll be well worth a listen. He always has interesting guests and interesting subject matter and all that kind of thing. So, I guess, without further ado, I should play a little tune for the bottom of the hour. And, I'm just looking through my little song list here. I wonder what little tune I'm going to play.
Oh, gosh, is it going to be a bit of folk? You like your folk music, don't you?
I do,
a bit of heavy metal?
Oh, no, I don't think I'll go with heavy metal. Do you know what?
Thank you.
I'm going to put on the Monkey Boy song, because we haven't played it for absolutely ages. And, that little message needs to go out there again, I think. So catch you folks on the flip side of the bottom of the hour. And after that, it's Shelley's Kerno Connection this week. She was off the hook last week, weren't you, Shelley? Because you had...
I was.
Great, the great Phil Hadley on. So he has agreed to come back, by the way. So I will... I'll keep you informed of that closer to the time.
But, great stuff.
Okay, so this is Monkey Boy Sings, and catch you folks in a second.
Every day I'm mortified by the cards in my country, and every day they fail to prove points I make are wrong. Have their thinking done for them by some propaganda mouthpiece, and they'll slander those of us who saw the nonsense all along. They present their kids to pharma scum on great big shiny platters, watch women's spaces compromised by mental bearded creeps. Come near my wife or children and your jaw might just get shattered. Start swimming now, or we'll all be dragged under by the sheet. Tell your daughters and sons that they must do the things we've done. Fight for what is right and make a stand. A battle for our way of life, ain't no rewards for being nice. Most evil folk on earth have played their hand. Fight these maniacs in any way you can. Hid their faces under masks since mid-June 2020, and in 2021 they queued like lab rats for their jabs. For 3 years now they've disregarded evidence aplenty. They act surprised now when it's mentioned in a few WhatsApps. But dare they try make little of our lives being dismantled, or argue at the time that it was somehow justified. Because the truth is scarier than many minds can handle. They'd rather scale it down to politicians telling lies. Tell your daughters and sons to question why the world is run by a tiny group of wealthy parasites. It's crucial, my friends, we don't get played like this again. The antidote for darkness is our light. Never cede your freedom for an easy life.
tree.
I'd forgotten actually what a good tune that was.
That is, excuse me, that is a good tune. Yeah, I like that
it
one.
It is a good tune.
I don't recall hearing that before actually, but you know what my memory's like.
Well, you're probably nipping off to the loo while I'm playing the song.
Probably.
I wouldn't
blame you. I was
just
thinking, have I got time? And I thought, no, I'm too late. I was enjoying the words.
Do you want me to play it again?
No, you're all right.
Oh, dear. Right, so, Shelley, drum roll. It's your Kerno Connection this week. So what have you got for us? I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. Tonight, I am going to tell you the story of William Lovett. 1800 to 1877 was his life. He was born in Newlyn, and he was known as a radical campaigner. Right. I've got to do my music. Okay, right. I've just got to do that every week now. Sorry.
Okay.
Right.
I'll remember to have some sort of introduction next week so that you can... I can pause and you can do that for me.
Yes, I will do that for you. Yes.
Oh, thank
okay.
you. Very kind. Live as well. It's great.
Live. A little tune by Shelley, yeah. Right. William Lovett. Okay. Right. Radical campaign. Campaigners must exercise power to be properly remembered, or they get lost in the fog of history as half-remembered agitators. William Lovett was one of the latter. He was never in Parliament, nor could he have been, which was among the things he complained of. A voice of crying in the political wilderness, he demanded votes for the voteless and education for the unschooled. Though we take for granted much of what he wanted to achieve, the eventual success of many of his causes does not make him famous today. Yet in his time, this peaceable man was all too well known as a menace to society. He was the only child of William Lovett and Keziah Green. His father was a ship's captain, originally from Hull, and never saw the son who was called after him because he was drowned at sea. So young, William was born to an already widower on the 8th of May 1800 in a thatched cottage in Newlyn, where the Centenary Methodist Church now stands. His baptism register at Poole Church, dated 28th of May, says that he was base-born, but at a time when marriage often followed the birth of the first baby, it was no slur on the character of his strict and God-fearing mother. Sad as the circumstances were, at least Keziah was supported for a time by her brother who worked locally as a rope maker, but he too died when William was just still a boy, and his mother had to be the breadwinner, not only for the pair of them, but for her own mother too. She coped and sent him to each of the dame schools in Newlyn, more or less in vain, until he finally got a grip on the 3 R's at the school up in Poole Village. She also taught him the difference between right and wrong, and took Sunday very seriously indeed. Young William kept his faith to the end of his life, but later came to think there were better ways of spending the only free day of the week than by going to chapel 3 times. At 21, Lovett took the big step of leaving Newlyn for London. To some extent, the decision was forced. His apprenticeship to a rope maker looked like a dead end at the time, when iron cables were the future and hemp ropes were becoming history, and he no longer needed to look after his mother because she had married again. So with 2 skills, rope making for the little that it was worth, and the carpentry that he had taught himself, he arrived in London with 30 shillings in his pocket and found work with a cabinet maker. He was 21, and from now on, London was to be his home. He returned to Newlyn only twice, first at the age of 40 for the sake of his health, after a year in prison had taken its toll, and then again at the age of 52 when his mother was dying. Lovett did nothing by halves, and his autobiography is the self-portrait of an obsessive. He read everything he could lay his hands on and took pains to shed the provincial ways and country speech that he thought would hold him back. He saw life as a struggle. His autobiography is called Life and Struggle of William Lovett in His Pursuit of Bread, Knowledge and Freedom. In the pursuit of bread, he failed and was poor to the end of his days. His pursuit of knowledge was not just on his own behalf, but became a vocation for others. When at 50, he abandoned politics to campaign for universal free education, to teach and even to write textbooks. But in the pursuit of freedom, he could claim a fair measure of success and immediate fame as the main organisers of the Chartists and the author of The People's Charter, that gave the movement its name. In 1836, a grassroots body called the London Working Men's Association had been set up, and Lovett became its secretary. Its original agenda, taken up by affiliated groups up and down England, was to petition Parliament for a democratic House of Commons, for even after the first Reform Act of 1832, only one man in seven could vote at non-very general elections. Lovett's charter called for MPs to be paid and able to stand without any property qualifications, for constituencies to be the same size, and crucially, for secret ballots on a one-man, one-vote basis. Lovett preferred this one adult's one vote, but recognised that they would never collect the signatures. When the charter was debated in the Commons in 1839, it was heavily defeated. But by then, Lovett had been sentenced to a year in prison for seditious libel. What he had done was to attack in print an order forbidding so-called People's Parliament to meet in the Bull Ring in Birmingham. This was all very heavy-handed. True, the Chartist movement had split in two, and a mountebank called Fergus O'Connor had put himself at the head of a militant group who wanted, in modern parlance, to smash the system by physical force. True also that Europe was going through one of its spasms. There had been revolutions in 1830, and more serious ones were incubating that broke out in 1848. But the idea that an insurgent mob was capable of overcoming disciplined troops was simply superstition. They never did so before, have never done so since. Even so, and in spite of his hatred of violence, Lovett suffered because violence was in the air. So how should Lovett be remembered? His memorial plaque in Newlands 4 Street speaks of him as a national leader in social reform. But that is true only in an undefining way. Any kind of reform implies some social change, but it is the means that make the difference, and the means Lovett proposed were not social but political in an old-fashioned 18th century way. He had been claimed as an ancestor of the Labour Party, a champion of the working class, and a prophet of the much that had come true, all which would make him a left-wing pioneer. Yet he comes into focus better if he is viewed not as a prophet, but as a throwback to the democratic mindset that shaped the American Revolution. When he refused to serve in the militia, his case was that he had not elected anyone to call him up. In slogan form, that came out as, "No vote, no musket." Just like the old American slogan of, "No taxation without representation." His basic belief was that men and women alike were brothers and sisters, and that reason nurtured by education could solve any problem. Some of his less practical ideas smell sweetly utopian, that Parliament should be re-elected every year. For instance, all that would-be MPs should have to pass tests of moral and intellectual fitness. Alas, even his vision of a Congress of Nations that would make wars a thing of the past looks even more like a mirage. In his struggles, he was staunchly supported by his wife Mary, of whom he writes with enormous affection. They were married in 1826 after some difficulties, she being an Anglican, as he was a nonconformist, and they had one daughter, also Mary. He died on the 8th of August, 1877, and his grave is in Highgate Cemetery, near that of Karl Marx. It is no great coincidence, for they have little in common. So that's a basic introduction.
Wow.
Yeah, I love this sort of stuff because it's like kind of my thing, the naughty people getting out there and trying to make changes. And
it is totally right up your street, this guy,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah. He is. So I've done a few searches, and he's not wildly known, not massively known. And I found quite a few bits in the end of the, what do they call it, the Chartists. Have you heard of that before? Because I've never heard of
the Chartist movement, but I've just looked it up now. There is actually a UK Parliament page on the Chartists movement,
yeah,
and
yeah,
their petition, etc., etc. So... but yeah, I do like the fact that no vote, no musket. I thought that was that's a great line. No vote, no musket. You know, I don't get the vote. I'm not going to go fight for you. What are you on about?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you know, and the fact that Parliament should be re-elected yearly—that would just their whole system would just fall apart. No wonder they locked him up for saying things they didn't like.
I know what I mean? But it's just, yeah, I mean, this was like early 1800s, and it's like, you know, we're 200 years on, and it just, we all know it's been happening since like the start of time. It's just always the poor people at the bottom, the rich at the top, trying to take everything away, and the little people trying to stand up for themselves. So anyway, I found loads of information on YouTube, but I didn't want to play anything too long, so I did send you. Did you get it?
I have got it, yeah, yeah.
All right, okay.
I switched on Skype about 10 minutes before the show, and I was like, I've got something to do.
So, I mean, ignore the first 10 seconds, because it's this guy just saying, like, hi, I'm from blah, blah, blah. But it's just a little two-minute clip, a little bit more detail about, like, the Chartist and about him. So, enjoy.
Okay, I've got no means of skipping it forward with StreamYard.
Yeah, don't worry. Just ignore the first 10 seconds, listeners.
Okie dokie.
If I was more organised, I would have, like, properly cut that out, but everything's...
Well, if you'd have told me that it needed doing, I would have done. I had 10 minutes.
I couldn't ask you to do that. You're busy enough.
Well, yeah, all right. Okay. Yeah, all right. Okay.
Thanks anyway. I'll remember that next time.
No. Don't worry. Don't worry. Right. Okay. Here it comes. Here's your clip, Shelley. Actually, first 3 seconds will be cut off anyway.
Hello, and welcome to History Pod. On the 4th of November 1839, the last large-scale armed rebellion against authority in Britain occurred during the Newport Rising in South Wales. Focusing on reform of the electoral system to improve the conditions of the working class, the release of the People's Charter in 1838 had prompted the creation of the National Working Class Chartist Protest Movement. William Lovett, from the newly established London Working Men's Association, had written the majority of the document, but a petition in favour of it was rejected by the House of Commons on the 12th of July, 1839. Parliament's refusal to listen to their concerns led to increased anger amongst the working class. Just 3 weeks after Parliament's refusal, the Chartist leader Henry Vincent was jailed by the Welsh Monmouth Assizes for making inflammatory speeches. This further angered Chartists in Wales, who soon began to organise and equip themselves for a mass protest. Between 3,000 and 5,000 Chartists marched into Newport on the 4th of November, by which time the authorities had prepared for a violent confrontation. The marchers made for the Westgate Hotel, where they heard a number of Chartist prisoners were being held, but their chant to "Surrender our prisoners" was met only with gunfire from the soldiers stationed there. An estimated 22 Chartists were killed in the ensuing battle, and dozens more were injured. Approximately 200 Chartists were arrested for their involvement in the march. The three principal leaders, John Frost, Zephaniah Williams and William Jones, were all found guilty of high treason and were sentenced to be hung, drawn and quartered. Although their sentences were later reduced to transportation for life following a national outcry, they were the last people to be sentenced to this gruesome punishment in England and Wales.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay, yeah. I didn't know whether it was moving on to something. Do you know, I'll tell you what, Lovett was wrong about one thing. And that is, they still use hemp rope today.
Oh, right, yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
But it was just when the start of the Industrial Revolution was taking place, I suppose. See the bigger things.
Yeah, and it is. And obviously, you know, back in those days, you know, iron cables and stuff like that, people were sort of going, oh, look, this is much stronger, and this is, you know, et cetera. And then, you know, it's like electric cars are waved under people's noses nowadays. Do you know what I mean? Oh, yes, look, it's much better for the environment. Forget how we make the magnets, by the way, and forget how we power the electricity, but they're much better for the environment. and forget how much they tear up the roads, by the way, because you're going to have to repair them more, and that kind of thing. But you know, then you fast forward a few years, you realise actually hemp is much cheaper and easier to produce and is the strongest natural fibre known to man. So, or one of the, you know, that's why they use it for making rope. So, you know, it all sort of comes full circle, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely.
I'll just revert back to nature, people. It's much easier. No, that was excellent, Shelley. That was excellent.
Oh,
yes, that was excellent. You got top marks for that one. I thought that was good.
Thank you.
That was great.
High praise indeed.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
Okay, let me just end it then. Hang on. Okay, right, you can carry on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, do you know what? Do you just want to be silly sometimes?
I'd like being silly most of the time, to be honest. It's what gets me through sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. I like being silly. That, in fact, did you know that was Monty Python's motto when they were actually making their shows? It was quite simply, the sillier the better. That was their motto.
They were so funny. They were. I mean, some of it I did think it was silly, silly, silly. I can remember watching it for the first time, not knowing what to expect. Just that, you know, it was a bit of a comedy. And, you know, when they're pretending to ride imaginary horses around and stuff, it's just like, oh, my God.
You got the man behind it with the coconuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but then, yeah, I think a lot of the silly stuff that they did actually was so silly, not even they got it. They just put it out there. Because it was, do you know what I mean? It was
just have a laugh.
Well, yeah. That's silly enough. Yeah, that's definitely silly. Yeah, let's put it out there.
And we forget, don't we? I can't remember, actually, the last time I had a really good belly laugh. Can you remember the last time you had a really good belly laugh?
No, do you know what? I do it regularly, and it's very healthy to do so. Normally, you know, particularly because I think also, I don't know whether you will agree with this statement or not, but when emotions are running high, emotions are easier to come by. So, as you know, my best mate's, you know, passed away recently and all that kind of thing. And I've been with him on the whole journey, and it's been a tough one. The reason I've been with him on the whole journey is because he's my bandmate, and we meet up at least once a week. So when emotions are running high, emotions are easy to come by. And what I mean by that is some days we'll crack a joke, or someone will say something, or they'll do something stupid or silly. And it just sets the other one off. And then we'll find ourselves, like, literally, you know, for a couple of minutes, just both in tears of laughter, you know, laughing. Because I think in some respects it's a release as well. Do you know what I mean? And you really embrace those happier moments when you've had tougher times. But no, I've been doing a lot of laughing recently. So yeah, I can tell you the last time I gut laughed was Tuesday.
That was yesterday. Oh, that's good. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have a giggle and I have a laugh, you know, but not when you really can't stop laughing. Giggles. Yeah.
It's always the worst. It's always when the worst things happen.
And in the worst places as well. Yes.
Yeah, when you shouldn't laugh. I mean, we used to get bored in the car. Me and my missus used to get bored in the car, and I'd say, right, the next bloke we see is your boyfriend.
Right.
We'd drive around the corner, and there's some old guy there, like, pushing his, or in an old, like, mobility scooter or something like that. Obviously, it's just a laugh. And I remember one day we got out of the car in the car park, and I said, the next person we see, because she'd already done, the next woman we see is your missus, so it was her turn. And the kids were with us as well. And I said, right, so the next person we see is your boyfriend. We were in St. Austell, right, and we pressed the button from the car park to get up in the lift, and the doors opened. And there was this, like, I'm just going to say, like, without wanting to sound nasty, I'm just going to say, like, a really, really backwards family there. Like, backwards, what I mean by
simple
backwards.
Family.
I don't mean simple. I mean backwards. I mean, like,
okay. Interbred.
Yeah, maybe standard Cornish envision. That's the joke. We make that joke about ourselves, by the way, folks, just for you guys overseas that think I might have been offensive. They always make jokes about Cornwall being inbred, don't they? So, no, but it was just a really backwards family, and the guy was, like, really like unkempt, unshaven, probably hadn't washed his teeth in a few months. And we had to get in the lift with them, and we're all there literally trying not to look anywhere, look at each other, because we're all just trying to hold it together, and this other family must have just thought we were so rude.
I like didn't realise
what
like
the
that.
Joke was yeah. beforehand. Oh, of course, we get out the lift, and they carried on to the next, or they got out the lift at one stop, and we carried on to the, and they got out, and honestly, we were crying for a long time. We must have got out the lift at the very top where the precinct is. And, yeah, the people getting on. I don't know what they must have thought, but, yeah.
They are the best ones, though, aren't they? I mean, actually, tell her, I can remember. You remember a couple of weeks ago, it was Valentine's Day, and I said to the audience and you that I'd drawn Darren a lovely Valentine's card. I'd drawn a picture of what I thought was a cove, like the sea. You could see the sea, you could see the side, there's a couple of caves, and then in the middle there was an oval shape, which was the inside of the cave, okay? And to colour that in dark brown, because it's supposed to be the inside of a cave, okay? And as I say, he's my cove when I cuddle up to him tonight. I'm in my cove. And then I drew a love heart around it. And when I gave him his card, he just kind of looked at the inside and looked at me and said, thanks. I said, so, come on, what does that mean? What is that a picture of? And he said, it looks like a vagina and a love heart. Oh, my God. I could not stop laughing. And it was... The things people... It's like, that's a cove. I had to explain to him. I sent you the picture, didn't I?
You did send me the picture. I did say, now he says it. You know, one thing I didn't mention at the time is that if that's the case, your legs need a shave, Mrs. But there we go.
The sand, yeah.
No, the grass on the top of the cliff, I meant, yeah.
Oh, right. But, oh, yes, yeah. So I recommend to everybody, make your own Valentine's card and ask somebody what
especially
they think of it.
Especially with crayons, because it makes it incredibly indecipherable as to what it actually is.
And he said that's the sort of thing you would do. And I was like, it's Valentine's Day, I'm being romantic. I've never, ever drawn you a smutty picture. That's your mind. So, anyway.
Yeah, oh, well, anyway, I'm not sure. I've seen that picture. Anyway, I tell you, here's another one for you. I was queuing up, I was queuing up in a fast food restaurant. I'm not going to say which one it was, but my daughter wanted some burger and chips or whatever it was she wanted. So we go in and I'm queuing up. And there's this guy stood next to us, and he's literally, I'm not joking. He's there, he's got a receipt in one hand and he's draped it over the other hand. But I've just noticed that the other hand is not a hand at all. It's a hook. It's like a genuine hook. He's got no right hand. He's got a hook there instead. And he'd obviously draped...
Have you found that funny?
No.
Okay.
No. He draped it over there, obviously, sort of to disguise it a bit, or whether it's like he's holding it in both hands, or whatever. No, what was funny is when he walked up to collect his order, there were three bags. He'd obviously ordered for the family, and he only had one hand, and the girl behind the counter went, do you want a hand with that? And I just looked at my daughter and went, oh, she didn't.
Oh, my God, that's the sort of thing I would say.
And she looked, she bless her, she looked so, like, mortified. She went all red and everything. Oh, that's so funny. Anyway, I like things like that. I like things
I do, I do. You've got to have a bit of humour in your life. And we quite often at the moment, like, when we commune, after I've had my time of watching shit TV, Darren comes to bed, and lately we've been putting on a bit of YouTube and finding different comedians. And, just a nice, easy way to wind down. Yeah,
Wonderful. Actually, one YouTube rabbit hole that I have been down, I say fairly recently, over the last year, there's a guy called Shai. I introduced my friend Patrick to him the other day. This guy is that what he does a show that he calls Illegal Freedom. He's only a young lad. He's one of these guys that used to go around grabbing on the back of buses or the back of tube trains to get to the next station and things like that. You know, climbing buildings and things that, you know, that's sort of extreme parkour, that sort of thing. But Shai, so it's Shiey, and he's been on two excursions across the Chernobyl exclusion zone and slept there and all that kind of thing. He's climbed the Duga radar. He's visited Cold War bunkers that were designed for up to 10,000 people, crawling in quite literally through air vents. I mean, oh my claustrophobia.
Wow. But
yeah, well worth a little look. Now I can hear the credits rolling, Shelley.
Where did that hour go?
It went with that excellent Curno connection. It went with that excellent Kerno Connection.
Most enjoyable. I hope you listeners enjoyed it as much as we did.
Yeah.
Just a little chat.
All right, well, look, great to have you all listening. You've got Jim Fetzer coming up next. I hope this has been a bit of a breath of fresh air for you guys until you hit the heavy subjects with Jim. So take care, all. See you soon.
Have a good week.